breaking ball and a call. Strike three. Third strikeout for Zach.
He's going to just watch it go. A grand slam for Bryson Stott.
And there's a high fly ball. Deep right field. Harper watches it fly.
From WHYY and Billy Penn, it is hitting season. Hey there, podcast pals. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight and Billy Penn. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. Coming up on this episode of the podcast, a potential game changer in the National League East. The Phillies' top rival loses maybe their best player and certainly one of the very best pitchers in the game. How's that going to affect things here in what has been a very rough National League East start for just about every team in the division? We're also going to get into this game, this series against the Washington Nationals this weekend in the nation's capital. Phillies take 2 out of 3. Had a chance for the sweep on Sunday, but couldn't score enough runs. And I almost said points. Like, I've never watched baseball before. You know those people who say, how many points did they score last night? I almost ran a points thing at you. But the Phillies win 2 out of 3. And so a decent weekend in Washington overall. And we'll get to a few other things as well. The Marlins and Mets, we'll laugh at them for a few minutes, too. Joining me, Justin Clue, Liz Rocher, my good pals, co-hosts here for Hittin' Season. This is episode number 800, by the way, everyone. So 800 episodes of this podcast. Of course, that's going back to 2015. So we just keep rolling right along. Elizabeth Rocher from Yahoo Sports. Follow her on Twitter at Liz Rocher. Liz, how are you?
John, I'm doing great. I'm excited to tell anybody who's been watching this on YouTube that soon the plight of me recording from my bedroom will hopefully be over. So excited for everyone.
Liz is going to be moving into a new place pretty soon, hopefully.
Yes.
And, the blankets and the bed and everything like that will be a thing of the past. But, you know,
I'd love to say we've come a long way since when I was literally podcasting from underneath a blanket.
Yep. And that was one of my first producers told you to do that, right? Remember
that? Is that true?
Yeah, remember one of our first SB Nation producers basically said there was too much echo in your room and suggested, I think, that you podcast from under a blanket because we weren't doing it on video at that point. So
No, from under a blanket I podcasted. And so now I'm sitting on my bed with a pillow and a sweater. So I can't wait to be able to say we've come a long way.
We've soon. Come a long way.
So
we
soon.
Really have. Yeah, back, I guess, 3 or 4 years ago when he mentioned that, I guess the unidirectional mic hadn't been invented yet. But here we are, lo these many years later, and we have the technology.
A rare miss from the SB Nation podcast department.
Exactly right.
Hard I'm to sorry, believe. The defunct, I believe.
Oh, right, sorry. What
the
used
now
to
defunct.
Be.
Yep, what used to be. Yep. We got hit with that this weekend, obviously, on my Eagles podcast, the Bleeding Green Nation podcast feed. I'm going to address that at the end. Not for long, but, you know, that obviously was kind of a little kick in the pants this weekend for all of us who were still hanging on at SB Nation doing some podcasting work. Anyway, Justin Clue from Baseball Prospectus also joining us here on the podcast. Follow him on Twitter at Justin_Clue. He also is part of the co-hosting team of The Dirty Inning and absolutely hammered over on our Hittin' Season Patreon. Justin, what's going on, buddy?
Well, he did it. He Connor bragged off. To the Dodgers.
He did.
Took my advice. I was surprised how many people responded or informed me using those words specifically that Connor bragged off to the Dodgers.
That phrase made an impact, Justin. I scoffed at it last time, but you know.
If only I had come up with it before several hours prior to his trade away from the organization. This could have been our big t-shirt money. Instead, yeah.
Now you've got to hand it off to the Dodgers. You got to say, here you go, fellas.
Well, here you go. More money for you, I guess.
Yeah. If only there were Dodgers podcasts out there, you know, then they would be able to use it. But unfortunately, no.
Have made money on a nickname that only works if he's bad?
See, this is why you're not invited to these development meetings, Liz.
Yeah, no
you
vision.
Take
There's no
these
vision.
Brilliant ideas, and you say, "How would that happen?" Or "Why would that work?" And instantly, they dissolve in our hands. It's less fun
when I come around peddling reality. I know
it's not. No, and I'll thank you to stop it. Please and thank you. All right, let's get into the show here. And normally we start talking off about, you know, the Phillies and the weekend that they had. And yes, one, they won 2 out of 3 in Washington, a kind of a little bit of a frustrating series from an offensive standpoint. The pitching was really good. We're going to dive into all that kind of stuff. But the talk around baseball right now, and it specifically affects the Phillies, which is why we're going to lead off the show with some news of that features another team, the Atlanta Braves, is, of course, Spencer Strider. It sure looks for all the world like he's going to be out for the season here. After his last start, felt some pain in his elbow. He went to the new chief elbow pitching guy out there, who I think that's his official title.
Dr. James Meister, is that what it was?
That's what it is. Okay.
Yeah. That's the new death sentence name you just don't want to hear. Dr. James Andrews retired, if you're not aware.
I didn't know that
prior to the season, and talked about several of the cases where, he just wound up being a name you did not want to see next to your favorite players. Now there's a new one.
But where is Dr. Neil El Atrache? I mean, he just ups and vanishes now. Where is he gone? Where is Dr. El gone?
Do you think these guys got into the game for the celebrity?
Probably,
because they wanted to have their names despised and spat upon by sports fans.
Actually, Dr. Neil now works exclusively for the Dodgers.
Oh, they're getting all the money. Oh, my God. Yeah. Who let this happen?
Well, I think Dr. Meister works for the Rangers, right? I mean, I think both of these guys work for a specific, or at least maybe he did work for the Rangers, if he doesn't anymore. But anyway, he was with the Rangers at a certain point. Anyway, Spencer Strider is going to see that guy, Dr. Meister. And it sure looks like he's going to need Tommy John surgery, which is a devastating blow to the Atlanta Braves. As good as the Atlanta Braves are, as good as that offense is, and it is an exceedingly good offense, an exceedingly good bullpen. That team is very, very good. But you can't lose maybe the best pitcher in baseball and not feel it. And maybe the weakest part of the Atlanta Braves has been the starting rotation. It still looked like to be a pretty good starting rotation this year, but anytime you lose a top 2 or 3 pitcher in the game, it's going to hurt. And obviously, this he's just the latest pitcher to need this surgery this year. Just been a rash of them. Shane Bieber, it was also announced this weekend, the Cleveland Guardians is going to need Tommy John surgery. So this is an epidemic going throughout baseball. Baseball fans have been deluged with stories all over the place trying to figure out why this is happening. Why is this happening? Is it coming back from high school? Is it velocity? Is it the sweeper? Is it, you know, the speed changeups, the gripping of the baseball, no tacky stuff? Is it the pitch clock? None of that really. I mean, we should try and figure out what all that is. But in terms of like play on the field, this Spencer Strider injury could mean big things in the National League East, Justin. And so what it could potentially do is open the door for the Phillies. And I don't know that it necessarily means the Phillies should be considered the favorites now in the National League East. I guess the question is, how much closer do you think it gets them to the Atlanta Braves? How big a loss is this for Atlanta?
The Phillies have a really good starting rotation, and the Braves had one of the best pitchers in the National League at the top of their rotation. As you said, there were questions about the depth that they were capable of achieving with that rotation. And now they're testing it pretty much immediately. So I think the Strider issue that like you kind of saw forming in that first game against the Diamondbacks, he let up 3 runs in the first inning. So already things were starting to look a little shaky and strange, or that like something's got to be wrong if a guy like Strider is getting hit that early. But then I think in addition to the next day, which was actually even worse, when Max Fried gave up 6 runs in the first inning. These were signs that this rotation, you find out pretty quick, oh, we don't have somebody that can keep runs off the board. Now, I don't think anybody was jumping to that conclusion just yet. It's still early. Strider is Strider. But then when you bring the health issues into it, it suddenly becomes, oh, what is this rotation without Spencer Strider? Hopefully, Chris Sale is somebody they can rely on. But if you're putting hopefully in front of statements like that, you're going to get in trouble real quick. Because again, it's early is kind of bad news in this case, because you got a lot of baseball left to play. Mm-hmm. Additionally, I will say, though, those 2 games I mentioned, the Braves won both of them. They came back and won both times. So they are also a team that has more strengths than their weakest point. Like they are a team that has an offense that obviously everyone is familiar with. And then if they are able to lean on that a little harder, I mean, I don't know, they seem to be able to handle most instances in the regular season of issues like this arising. We'll see what happens. I think you're definitely going to see them try to make an adjustment of some kind, make a move of any kind. This is going to be an issue for them starting pitching wise, but it sure is nice to be a team that can just be like, oh, we can't shut you out and just score a couple runs. Great. Why don't we just score 8 or 9 runs every game and see what happens?
Yeah, I mean, Liz, they certainly are capable of doing that. I really did think their offense would take a step back this year just because I didn't think there's no way they can replicate what they did last year. So far, they've been replicating what they did last year. But
and my nuts, does it look even better? Like, I feel like it looks better. It looks even more lights out, top to bottom, no weak points. Suddenly Michael Harris is like this huge problem when he was just kind of a big problem last year. Like, yeah. Why is it better?
Yeah, shouldn't be better. Nope. Shouldn't be better. But Liz, I mean, I think this is one of those things where maybe they don't feel it until later in the season. I mean, they might be able to get by with Bryce Elder. They might be able to get by with whoever else it is. They're going to call up Justin shaking his head. No, they're not going to. We saw Bryce. No, not Bryce.
If you're pinning your hopes to Bryce Elder, then you've already lost the NLDS.
Right. Well, and the funny thing here too, Liz, is that if you wanted to go out and trade for somebody at the trade deadline, Shane Bieber was going to be the best guy available, and he's not there anymore. So the Marlins may move on from Jesus Luzardo. He'll probably get traded at the trade deadline. But I was listening to a couple of guys on MLB Network today, and they were essentially saying Braves don't have enough in the farm system now to compete with the other teams that would want to go after him. So there may not be a solution at the trade deadline for Atlanta. So the question, I guess, to you is, do you think Atlanta, can they still win the division with a Spencer Strider-less guy at the top of the rotation with that offense?
Oh, yeah. If only because they're the Braves. I feel like they no longer have like a Dodgers-esque, like unfillable, a bottomless hole of young players to just throw at every problem. But, you know, their offense will slow down at some point. But I also think that they're the Braves. Their offense does look better. Like, Michael Harris spent his first weekend, I think, beefing with Phillies fans on Twitter.
Some more than others that we know personally.
Maybe. A little bit. Somewhat. Yes. So, it makes me feel a little bit better that there's, you know, you could see a little bit of daylight through the steel curtain. That is the Braves. But I'm not going to believe that they're going to be affected by it until I see it, because they always seem to find a way to get by. Like last year, they managed to have almost everything. But, you know, still couldn't make it. So I don't know. I still have a sinking feeling that they're just going to be as good.
I mean, let's not forget they also have a bullpen. They also have a really, really good bullpen.
Yeah. Like
the problem with losing Strider is that you're losing kind of like that big calling card from the weakest part of what they had. Like in their weakest part, they still had one of the best guys in the league. They had a Cy Young contender, one of the top two Cy Young contenders leading off their rotation, which was again considered one of the weakest component of their roster. But I mean, if you saw the game today, Chris Sale got the start. You know, goes 5 and 2/3, and then the relievers come in and they don't allow really anything to happen for the rest of the game. And then they just for fun got home runs from three different guys, you know. So they have the dimensions to pull this off. Though I will say, you know, we're giving the Braves a lot of credit here, and it's deserved. But this humanizes them, I think. This does really.
They're not invincible.
No, this brings them down a bit. And it's hard to really put them, the Phillies, in the same conversation just based on what we've seen so far, where the Phillies have just struggled to hit the ball hard in moments where you really want them to do so, whereas the Braves are just like, the middle part of our lineup just like kind of went off today. Tomorrow it'll be the top part. You know, tomorrow the number 9 guy will hit 2 homers. Like, it's, you know, it's whatever. That being said, this kind of humanizes them and kind of brings them closer to I think, the Phillies and makes something like winning the division for the Phillies a little more possible. Because, you know, it almost goes without saying, but Spencer Strider is a huge part of this team, and losing him for any amount of time is going to impact their chances. Now, I saw a couple of Braves fans who saw that Strider was put on the 15-day injured list and saw that as a good thing. Like, oh, well, hey, that's not so bad. And of course, had to be told, no, that actually
people don't have functioning brains, do they? No, yeah,
that's not a sign of good news at all, unfortunately. Yeah. Because, again, speaking objectively, I don't want to compliment the Braves too much here, but speaking objectively, Spencer Strider is a cool young pitcher. He really is. He is a fun guy to watch. The biggest issue is that he does what he does in a Braves uniform.
Yeah.
But that being said, the Braves lost the strongest part of their weakest part. That's what I've been struggling to say.
Yeah,
and that's really going to impact their chances to win the division.
Yeah, I think it does bring the Phillies closer. I think it brings them quite a bit closer. I think Max Fried struggling early certainly should have Atlanta fans nervous. He's been really beat up in his first two starts. He gave up 6 runs in the first inning here over the weekend in his last start and got, you know, beat up by the Phillies. Now, he should have gotten out of an inning in which he gave up a bunch of runs on that awful missed call by the home plate umpire in the Phillies game, that second game of the season. But
that's part of the game.
Part of the game, for sure.
Gotta roll with it. Yeah. And honestly, without Strider in that rotation, I don't think they have a pitcher that the Phillies couldn't eventually beat.
That's what I'm saying. Spencer Strider has specifically been a Phillies killer over these last few years. And so in that regard, the Phillies can go into some of these series knowing that they can get to every one of those Braves pitchers. We'll see how they do with Chris Sale. They haven't really ever faced Chris Sale before, but they know that Spencer Strider was a stopper for them, especially in series against the Phillies in the regular season. Obviously the Phillies have had a little bit more success against him in the postseason. They've never hit him around, but they've managed to beat him when they've faced him the last couple seasons, with the exception of the, you know, Rhys Hoskins bat spike game. So what this is really going to do, what's going to be really interesting to see here with Atlanta, is as the season goes along, if Bryce Elder is called up and he's the fifth guy, and yeah, they have another guy, Shane Schuster. I had the depth chart in front of me. Now I can't remember his name. He pitched in the playoffs against the Phillies last year. Throws hard, but was hit around quite a bit. They don't have somebody to replace him. So that's going to affect how much the bullpen gets used, how often the bullpen gets taxed during the course of a season. So it may not affect them much here in April, but as you go to June and July and August, like, how much is that bullpen, which is very good, how much are they going to get worked? How much are they going to get used? How much is it going to be stressful to the offense if they know now we have to carry the team? Will that affect the offense a little bit? And can the Phillies then, the other side of the coin here is, can the Phillies take advantage of this? And that's always a big question when it comes to the Phillies. Can they take advantage of soft parts in their schedule? Can they take advantage of some of these little mystical benefits that befall teams every once in a while? The door's open for the Phillies to take this division. Now, it's been opened. Can they walk through it?
Will they walk through it, or will they aim wrong and accidentally walk into the open door itself?
They just keep walking into the wall next to the door.
just like one of those wind-up toys, just like stuck against a wall, just repeats and repeats and repeats.
Accidentally get like a chair stuck under the knob. You're like, well, how did this happen?
The whole time they can't stop themselves from just walking into the door the whole time.
We have to remember in this conversation that the Phillies we're watching now are, if historical trends continue, not the Phillies we're going to be watching in a couple of months, or maybe even a couple of weeks. There is a more competitive version of this team that we have seen. That is just, it's hard to believe when you're watching them and they're at this point and they're just coming out. And I know we're going to talk about it, but like stuff like, oh, they're not fully back yet. Oh, they're not fully awake yet. Oh, they haven't gotten out of spring training yet. Okay, you get maybe a 2-week grace period for that kind of stuff. The base running issues we're watching them commit, that's on another level to me. That's not even lack of preparedness. That's lack of awareness. You know, that's lack of baseball IQ. And that's a lot more troublesome. That being said, if you want to take advantage of the kind of opportunity we're talking about, that like, hey, look, the Braves are, you know, they've been humanized and the rest of these teams don't look like they're able to compete, then look, you can wait to become that team that's a little more competitive, that has its head on straight, that's hitting more line drives, that doesn't have, you know, as a weak a plate approach, that has more solid contact from guys like Trey Turner and Nick Castellanos coming through at like important times, that has runners in scoring position coming in to score, that has guys who aren't getting picked off first base or getting trapped between second and third in big moments or bunting the ball in the air or trying to bunt and missing it. All this stuff. All this stuff is still going to be a part of their game. It's just they're going to be a little more in the zone and you know, in used to playing with each other, and they find their groove, and that's the team. That's the team that can take advantage of this. The problem is, will that actually still be an opportunity, or will the Braves just kind of like thrive for no reason without a starting pitching staff, and just like their offense is going to be like, we can do this. We can take the ball and run with it. We saw the Phillies play some of their best ball without Bryce Harper. So can the Braves do the same thing without a star? It's tough to say absolutely not. It's really tough to count the Braves out.
I do want to say, I think the word you're looking for, Justin, might be vulnerable. Humanized makes me think of them as humans, and I would rather avoid doing that. I feel like vulnerable is a better word. They've been made vulnerable a little bit.
They're showing their soft underbelly.
Yes. I like the soft underbelly.
Yes. Mm-hmm. One of the little pieces of armor has fallen off.
Yeah.
But the question just becomes, how quickly are the Phillies going to become that team? Like,
right.
How long are we going to play this game?
Well, I mean, that's the thing. The Braves have shown a vulnerability. I mean, that's totally true. Will it affect their confidence? I doubt it. But
no.
things can happen during the course of a long season. And the Phillies have to take advantage of opportunities when they present themselves. The rest of the division is gross. The Marlins and the Mets and the Nationals, it's going to be a fascinating race to the bottom for the rest of the National League East. It is a disgusting display with those three teams. The Nationals less so really than the Marlins. The Marlins and the Mets are laughing stocks right now. The Nationals, at least, there's some stuff there. You know, you go on to play the Nationals, you know, you expect to win two out of three. You expect to win those series, but they're gonna play tough. They're gonna play hard. They're not gonna fall all over themselves and do ridiculously stupid things. I mean, they certainly do not play a clean game of baseball most of the time, but the Nationals are a respectable opponent right now, even though they may not win a whole lot of games.
I want to talk about the Marlins for just a bit. I'm sorry, if you want to talk about the Nationals, we can keep doing that, but I want to talk about the Marlins a little bit.
The Nationals are just, you know, a rebuilding team with some of their two or maybe three of their young, exciting players like currently up with the team, and they've plugged a lot of cheap free agents into other roles who aren't going to be there. Like, I think the Nationals are totally fine with where they are right now. They are always just a little proud of themselves anyway, but like, I do think they are currently in a state where they're like, yeah. This is pretty much by design.
They're self-aware. We know what we are, you know, and that's okay. We're building. Yeah.
Right.
But like Liz, the Marlins avoiding the 0-10 start on Sunday by salvaging a win.
Salvaging.
What they've done with Kim
barely matters.
Oh my goodness gracious. Go ahead and talk about the Marlins, because it really is something else.
Go back a little bit and look at the Marlins as a team. If we start with their offseason, after they made the playoffs, this past year, right? And they stunk. And
we beat them in the wild card round.
Yes,
it was very good.
Right.
So, they did not win a game.
Mm-mm. So what happened after that? After making the playoffs, they decided they wanted to take their incredibly successful trailblazing executive Kim Ng and put another executive between her and the owner.
Makes total sense. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Effectively demoting her and giving her a new boss.
Who wouldn't be excited about that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. So she left, and they hired a guy who I actually wrote. I wrote about him. I can't tell you what his name was. I apologize. Whoever their new GM is, he's a young guy, and he proceeded to do absolutely nothing.
They did nothing.
They
did
almost negative things. They lost players, did not replace them with anyone. They start the season 1-9. And today, the Marlins confirmed that they are ending their manager, Skip Schumacher's contract this year. He will be a free agent after the end of this year.
So they made him a lame duck in the middle of the season.
Not even middle. It is game 10 today.
Wow.
They decided and this was almost certainly something that they knew they were going to do, but because they've got a whole new regime, new owners. So
what is the thinking behind doing that? Why would a team be like, oh, and by the way, you're done. at the end of this year? Like, what do they gain from that?
Nothing. They actually, it feels like this is real life Major League. Only there isn't a lovable group of ragtag, you know, can-doers, you know, screw up, little, you know, light screw ups and whatnot. They're just baseball players who cannot hack it. And it's going to be miserable. And the person who owns their team does not care.
The way it's being explained, I'm sorry to interrupt, but the way it's being explained is the new GM, whose name is Peter Bendix.
Thank you, Peter Bendix. I knew it had a weird letter in it somewhere.
Right. So Schumacher was obviously a Kimming hire. Now he comes in and he essentially is going to want, they're going to sell everybody off this summer. Like, it's going to be a complete sell-off.
They already have, mostly.
Right. So they're gonna sell off Jesus Luzardo and everybody else on that team who possibly, Jazz Chisholm may get traded. I mean, lots of different guys may get traded. It could be an absolute decimation of the roster. Schumacher's not going to want to be around anyway. He may have gotten wind of what the plans were and just said, yeah, let's void my 2025 year. I don't need to be here for this. But Bendix wants likely to hire his own manager. He doesn't want to hire. He doesn't want to keep
someone
Schumacher aboard.
Someone who sucks instead of some guy who might have made it work with decent players.
Someone who's willing to be on board with the team bottoming out rather than a manager who made the postseason last year and expects the team to progress, you know, like a normal baseball team would.
What's incredible is that if the next person, anyone who calls this a rebuild, should be taken out and pointed at and laughed at in front of everyone, because you cannot have a rebuild unless you were somewhere to begin with. And making the playoffs for a single year as a wildcard team that won zero games is not something you rebuild from. It's something you keep building on. If you dismantle what you just had, what are you doing and why? I'm sorry. I'm so angry at this, and there's no reason to be. But
I mean,
like,
it's tough for them to convince anyone they're a competitive franchise, that they're trying to win. I mean, I forgot they acquired Tim Anderson. He used to be one of me and Liz's favorite players until the stretch. He just, you know, wasn't doing it anymore.
Injuries, and then they hired Tony La Russa over in Chicago, I guess specifically maybe to make Tim Anderson uncomfortable.
They're like, how's this going to work? Oh, it's just not. It's just not going to work. Okay, fine. I don't know how the Marlins will keep up the guise of being any kind of like, we're in it to win it. Like, we're definitely, we want to win baseball games and hopefully more of them. I mean, the assumption, like, we're already saying when things get to that point, it'll be just, the Marlins just doing what the Marlins have always done. Yeah. A little bit of, this is what people were afraid of with the Phillies wild card flag, that they would get a little bit of success and be like, that was enough, and never do it again. This is actually that.
Yeah.
Well, and can you imagine what would have happened? Like, I love how people were legitimately scared of that, because in no universe could I imagine that happening, because Phillies fans are too demanding. Like, there aren't enough. The Marlins have not been good enough for long enough as a team, even though they're not very old, to actually build this type of fan base. They haven't been good. They haven't even been bad for long enough like the Phillies were. There's just nothing there, and they have no one to hold them accountable, because the fans are the only ones in any way who can do that, you know, and they do that with their wallets, and they're doing it by not showing up, but that also means they're not caring, at least for the Phillies in that position. The fans won't go, but they will yell at you all the same.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the Phillies are already pot committed to making this like a World Series do or die.
Oh, yeah, of course.
You know, so there was never any worry that, like, oh, they got the wild card flag up there, now they can rest on their laurels, and that was never a serious thought. I know a lot of the reasoning was, well, it cheapens the other flags. Oh, yeah. Stop. Just, I don't want to relitigate that argument, but so the Phillies have an opportunity here. This all has to do with the Phillies. I know we haven't really talked about the Phillies here for the first 25 minutes of this show, but this all has to do big picture with the Phillies, because you've got a Mets team that's also cratering. They can't hit the broadside of a barn. The Marlins, you're, if failed to mention another Tommy John guy, Yuri Perez. is going to be out for the year with Tommy John surgery. One of the other, and Sandy Alcantara is already out for the season with Tommy John surgery. So, I mean, you've just got one injury after another with the Marlins. That team is dead. Cross them off. Cross off the Mets. Cross off the Marlins. You can probably cross off the Nationals as a real problem. So it's a two-team race. And we kind of knew it would be a two-team race, but now it's really a two-team race. There should be an ample opportunity here for the Phillies to really challenge Atlanta now for the division. The gap has gotten a lot smaller. And so you have this series in Washington this weekend. The Phillies take the first two games. They have a chance to go for the sweep on Sunday. Can't get the job done. The offense was frustrating all weekend long. Even in the victories, the offense was frustrating to watch, but they did enough because the pitching carried them through this weekend. So let's talk about the pitching first before we talk about the offense and the base running, which was infuriating during the course of the weekend, even in winning two out of three. They got a really good start. Check that. They got a good start from Aaron Nola in the series opener on Friday. He didn't have his best stuff, but limited the damage, got it done, got through it, got to the, you know, gave him some innings. Perfectly good start for Aaron Nola on Friday. On Saturday, Ranger Suarez came out. He had another excellent start, did a good job with the Nationals lineup. And then on Sunday, you had Christopher Sanchez, who danced between the raindrops, couldn't make five innings, but he did give up just a couple of runs before exiting. Unfortunately, he had to use the bullpen quite a bit in this game. So neither of these pitchers went deep. You had to use a lot of bullpen arms during the course of this weekend, which can be problematic now as we move into the week. But they got two out of three. Disappointing, though, Justin, that they weren't able to get this third game and get the sweep. You want to take advantage of this. Talk about the soft underbelly. This next portion of the schedule is just filled with teams that the Phillies should be able to take advantage of. Like, this is an opportunity to make hay on the schedule against the Atlanta Braves and kind of move forward. Let's talk about the pitching. Your thoughts on the starting pitching and the bullpen this weekend. Really good efforts. Who really impressed you this weekend?
Well, it would have to be Suarez, I think. Like, Nola had some work to do. He had to climb out of that game two hole. And you're right. He did. He was a perfectly good Aaron Nola start. No runs allowed. I mean, really, I think that's got to be a close contender to one of the best performances of the weekend. You know, the four walks, I think, is what's going to jump out to people. The command issues, that's obviously, you know, something that's got to get under control. But the fact that he was able to at least be bailed out in situations where he might be approaching trouble, where we know in the past he has struggled, he gets in his own head and he just starts to implode. We didn't see that, you know, and we saw that he was able to go 5 2/3 shutout innings. Fine. I will take that as an Aaron Nola start. Totally. The Phillies need to start racking up wins, which is why today I didn't want to let him off the hook. You're like, yeah, you got the series won, but Christopher Sanchez is going out there. Like, you know, you're probably going to have to give him a little more offensive boost. You're going to have to be, you know, hitting Mackenzie Gore, who throws a lot of fastballs, and the Phillies can hit fastballs. But part of the problem was Sanchez was leaving a lot of sinkers down the middle. Like, that was just... It was the most hittable thing in DC since Ted Cruz's face. I thought of that earlier today. Is that good? That's
well
good.
Executed.
Right. It's a good one.
Yeah. I don't care what side of the political spectrum you're on. That's funny. It's just funny right there.
It was definitely not Sanchez's best stuff. But like, when your number five starter goes out there, you got to be prepared to deal with somebody who's not throwing the best stuff. Yeah. So I think this weekend, probably in all three of these games, you could come down on the defense, on the offense. But Ranger Suarez went six innings, you know, in his start. Four hits, two earned runs, four strikeouts. He allowed the home run. I mean, again, I think you can say of all three of these starts, they did their job. You know, even Sanchez, to an extent, as a number five guy, it's not that he has more leeway, he just has lower expectations. He's going to make starts like that where it's just not working. You know, the pitches he has come to rely on just were looking hittable to one of the more mid offenses in the National League. But in Suarez's case, he came out and gave him six innings. Thompson was able to go to guys like Hoffman and Soto and Alvarado, who are starting to really find their groove, and they were able to carry it the rest of the way. But Suarez looked like he had his composure. He made a couple of defensive plays. I mean, he made a typical Rangers Suarez start, which is kind of what we need to see more of. We need to see more of these good pitchers making starts that are typical for them because they're good pitchers. Like, blah, 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 the whole conversation. But Aaron Nola is a good pitcher. Like, he is a good pitcher. He wouldn't have the deal he has if he wasn't a good pitcher. He wouldn't be in as many conversations about pitching in the National League if it wasn't a good pitcher. So we know that he is capable of being a good pitcher, and he's got to make more starts that are typical of that. Wheeler's got to keep doing what he's doing, and Suarez has to pitch like he pitched this weekend, where he came out, he gave him at least six innings, he fielded his position, he was unrattled and unbothered by most of the events of the day, and yeah, he just pitched a solid game that gave them the opportunity to win. Yeah, that's what it's got to be. It's got to be typical to look good.
Yeah, I forget on Friday the Phillies only gave up two hits as a team, as a two hit shutout by Aaron Nola and the relievers. Matt Strom went an inning in a third. Sir Anthony Dominguez and Jose Alvarado each pitched an inning in that game. And then in the game on Saturday, Liz, the bullpen once again did a great job. Now Suarez gave them six innings, so you only needed three innings. But Jeff Hoffman comes in, gets another five out. Relief appearance from him. Jeff Hoffman. I was concerned, man. Bingo. He was going to fall back to earth after kind of surprising us all last year, but he looks great. And Gregory Soto has been a very good kind of lefty specialist situational guy so far. I mean, that he comes in and he's able to kind of, you're not asking him to do too much just right now. And he's been very good here to start the season. He has yet to be scored on. Jose Alvarado came in and the umpire was a little bit iffy with the strike zone and was, you know, had some with the save. He managed to get it done, but threw a few more pitches than I think anybody wanted. And then in the aftermath of the Chris Sanchez start, you had Junior Marte coming in, did really well in this game. He came in a difficult spot, gave up a sacrifice fly. It was the go-ahead run, but really limited the damage. He pitched an inning and two-third. And then you had Strom another inning, Sir Anthony Dominguez another inning. They didn't give up any runs. The bullpen, Liz, this weekend was not charged with a single run. And so it's after that rough start against the Atlanta Braves, this Phillies bullpen starting to pitch as advertised. And I think, again, we're looking big picture. The pitching staff, you get performances like this from the starters and the bullpen. The Phillies are going to be successful even when the offense is struggling.
Yes. These are, I think, especially Hoffman, Strom, and Soto, that trio. Did they all pitch on the same day? I think it might have been Alvarado, but they'll represent like significant Phillies success stories and, you know, steps forward for their development and scouting staff, because Hoffman is a mixture of scouting and, you know, development pitching, you know, their pitching department, because they found a guy who they thought they could help and could be good for them. And lo and behold, it actually turned out they turned him into this guy. They're mm-hmm. able to, they've been able to take Matt Strom and turn him into something spectacular, because he had, I think, some up and down results, and they've been able to coax some stability out of him. It's been, I see a weekend like this and it feels like such a long road. We've traveled to get here. We remember 2020 and we wonder, how was this bullpen ever going to be? Like, it was hard to see a way out through the forest of crappy closers and the Genmar Gomez's of the time. But, you know, they've been so successful that they're now a destination. And relievers want to go there, which is only going to help the Phillies have, like, a pick of who's good. Like, I trust them now. If someone goes down, they'll be able to find someone to take their place, because that's what they did last year. Look at the success stories that they found, the good guys they found mid-season. You know, it's I can't wait to see what happens the rest of the season, and how, since they started off so well, how they handle the inevitable bumps in the road that will come along.
Yeah, your bullpen's going to run into trouble at times, especially like the more you lean on it. But Rob Thompson's obviously almost seemingly too committed to his rest schedule for relievers. But it's just nice that you can hit that sixth inning sweet spot with some of these starters. You can aim for that, you know, and then hopefully if the pitch count's good, if they're not sweating it, you can leave them out there to eat as many innings as possible. But It is an absolutely huge boon for this team to have a bullpen that they can rely on. I mean, I shake my head at Jeff Hoffman. It's out of impressiveness, not out of disgust, like with some people. But
it's more like a nod of appreciation more than a shake of
right. Like I'm smiling sagely.
Yeah, you're just shaking your head like, how did he do that?
A slight wink of the eye.
Right.
Yeah,
like
he
strikes out the last batter in an inning and he sees me standing over the dugout going like that. But then I like fade away like a ghost in the wind. But Jeff Hoffman, 4 games, 4 1/3. He's allowed 2 hits and 2 walks.
Yikes.
No runs. Struck out 6. Great, I mean, stuff. This is exactly, and like opening day was discouraging for all the reasons we recall. But when we're talking about this team matching up with the Braves, especially now in this recontextualized NL East, this bullpen is something that is going to be huge for them to be able to rely on. And, you know, we talked about Gregory Soto and how you're always a little bit nervous when it's Gregory Soto, but he is right up there with Hoffman so far this season.
Yeah.
4 games, only 2 2/3 innings, but he hasn't allowed any runs either. And like the longer you can do that, the longer you can put off that bad inning, the better for the Phillies. Because and then like you're saying, Junior Marte, last year he was not one of the arms that he came into a game and you thought, okay, yeah, they're getting out of this. He wasn't a guy that Rob Thompson would go to in the high leverage moments. He was somebody to go to when, like, you know, maybe it's the middle of the game, starter came out early, or, you know, we're down by a couple more than we wanted to be at this point. But now he has also looked like an effective reliever, you know, again, very early, but that is very encouraging to see as well. He's made it into 5 games already. Yeah. And hasn't allowed a run. I mean, he's pitched more than Jeff Hoffman. So that is a positive development. And to Liz's point that this is a place where pitchers can come to get better, that is also a huge strength for the Phillies, is that somebody like Marte can come back and look like a more effective reliever from last year, and suddenly the bullpen gets a little deeper.
Yeah, and it's why you kind of are interested anytime the Phillies make a trade, like moving on from Connor Brogdon, and you bring back this Benoni Robles kid who's 23. He apparently strikes out a bunch of guys. He's got a big arm, but he has trouble commanding the baseball. Look at what the Phillies have done with guys like Christopher Sanchez. That's a guy you would describe that way before they got him to kind of slow things down and get his command. And now they're trying to work on his velocity to bring it back up now that they've gotten that part figured out. But Jose Alvarado obviously was a guy they were able to turn into one of the most dominant weapons coming out of the bullpen in baseball, and he's a guy who couldn't find the strike zone with a map and a magnifying glass. So you have confidence that the team can start to develop these guys. The thing that worries you about the bullpen is that you can't expect the starters to go 7 or 8 innings every time out. So what you'd like to have is you like to have the offense win some more comfortable games, like have the offense provide some more
contribute.
Runs. So that...
Well, that's all we were talking about the offense yet, so I didn't mention that.
I'm just saving them for last, kids. That's all. Yeah, I see what I did. I sucked him in with the lure of candy, and now comes the homework. That's what we're doing here. So you have with this offense, they're not allowing the Phillies. You guys are skeptical of that analogy. The eyes,
I think
the
you
eyes
might have been looking
for
medicine. Is that what you were looking for? Because you said homework, and I thought we were doing a Mary Poppins.
That would have been better.
Full of sugar. Because then, like, homework.
Analogy.
Like, what is the homework here?
I just was thinking of something unpleasant, like candy, candy, candy. Now here's math. You know, that's kind of what I was thinking of. But
is someone giving you homework, John?
No, we give the children homework. That's
not
why
everyone hates math. I mean, I don't like it.
Everyone hates math. Everyone hates math. It's a universal truth.
I have family members that love math.
It depends.
They're lying.
On math.
No.
I don't want to tell you.
I like shapes. You know, if it's math, math with shapes, I'll sit down and let's go over circumferences.
Like a 3-year-old, I enjoy large, bright shapes and pointing
shapes and
at
colors.
Them.
Shapes and colors.
Identifying them. Blue, this is- circle.
That's math. That's good math. I don't know what everybody's complaining about here. All right, so candy and medicine. Let's go that way. Although kids' medicine now mostly tastes like candy, but we're just going to move on from the analogy.
John, are you taking kids' medicine and doing homework?
Shh.
You
it's fine.
Remember how terrible Robitussin tasted? I'm sorry.
It
I
really
just
was
have
terrible.
Ask.
It was awful.
It was really
yes.
The
worst. Robitussin cough medicine was the worst, and it's still not great for adults. But like kids' medicine, it's. I'm not kidding. It's like you're drinking like a sugar packet. They make it so good for the kids. Like, oh, can I have my ibuprofen? It's like, okay. I mean, like, they just not, you know, like, you know, when they're coming in from playing and they just want, you know, ibuprofen. But anytime they have a fever or headache, it's like, do I get to have ibuprofen? It's just so good.
My mom never got out of bed today, Dad. Where's the ibuprofen?
It's a little weird when I go to my wife and she has to squirt it into my mouth because I've got a headache. But and normally you need like 55 ounces of it, but it, it works, you know, if you get enough.
My wife puts it in cheese or I spit it out.
That's right. Where
I like
are
to
we?
Take it in yogurt and ice cream are good ones too.
Yogurt and ice cream are good ones. Yeah, we've all got
well, I just don't, I don't want to talk about the Phillies offense. I mean, I have thoughts on them, but frankly.
I'd rather talk about Robert Sosa and Dimetap, kids.
I want to do what the Phillies offense would do and stay silent.
Disappear.
Oh, there it is. There's a hitting season podcast, and there's no hitting season going on with the Phillies right now, friends. That's the thing. You would like to see some less high leverage innings for this team to play, for this bullpen to pitch through, because Rob Thomson really does have to really figure out, okay, I can use this guy for an inning and get one out here. And, you know, if you're up like 8-2, you can run a guy out there like they did with Ricardo Pinto a few nights ago and afford to get three innings out of a guy or, you know, two innings out of a guy. Out of the, you know, number six or seven or eight guy in your bullpen and not have to worry about, you know, going to Sir Anthony and can I use Alvarado? I got to stay away from Soto. We used him three nights in a row or whatever it is. So the offense plays a role in how good this pitching staff is going to be as well. And even though they won the first two games of this series, it was still kind of a rough showing from the offense. Harper did have a good series this weekend. Five hits, two doubles, had an RBI. JT Realmuto had a good series as well. He hit a home run for the Phillies on Saturday after the Phillies intentionally walked Bryce Harper. He had the big blow on Saturday, the three-run home run that put him up 4-0. Edmundo Sosa hit a home run, a solo shot for the Phillies on Sunday. Realmuto, we should really kind of talk about Realmuto because he had a down year offensively last year, never really got it going, but the team really seemed optimistic that he was going to be back this year. And Rob Thomson has been batting him cleanup. It's important to have a guy in this lineup that can protect Bryce Harper in the lineup. And JT Realmuto on Saturday did that by hitting the three-run home run. Didn't have a hit on Sunday, but really very few players on the team did. Liz, JT Realmuto as the team's cleanup hitter, I'm not sold on it as like the he's going to be the big protection, but right now in terms of right-handed hitters on this team, he is by far this team's best hitter from the right-handed side of the plate, and it's encouraging to see him hitting well here in the early going.
Completely. I think some of this him hitting cleanup, I mean, I'm surprised to see it, if only because it is a change in the lineup, and Rob Thomson is allergic, it feels, to that. I think in a less extreme way than we've seen in the past, but he loves things to be the way that they were yesterday. I would like to see him be flexible if Realmuto stops producing and protecting Bryce Harper, but it's really encouraging at this point to see him doing that. Because last year it felt sometimes, at least especially when there were runs to get, when there were runs to bring in, Realmuto just disappeared. He was just sort of gone.
Oh, double plays all the time. Pop-ups with runners on third and less than two outs. It was rough.
I think that's part of the complaint from last year, is that it felt really bad because there were a lot of opportunities for him to score runs and bring runs in, and he just did not do that very often. So it is incredibly encouraging early on to see him already changing the narrative from last year, already sort of taking control of things. You know, 'cause Philly need a driver. They need someone at least to hit a home run every now and then, you know, whose name is not Bryce Harper or, I guess, Edmundo Sosa today. So
right. Well, especially from the right-hand side of the plate. Mm. And the Phillies have really gotten not much from, Nick Castellanos and Johan Rojas have been utter black holes from the right-hand side of the plate, Justin. Trey Turner had a couple extra base hits this weekend. Maybe he's starting to find his swing a little bit. Alex Bohm had a triple in the series, too, which was a big hit. So the Phillies are getting a little bit of offense, a little bit more in this series against a weaker pitching staff in the Nationals than they had faced in their first two series. But overall, still, this team's not delivering with runners in scoring position. They're not hitting the ball well enough for extra base hits. And a lot of this is coming from the right-hand side of the plate. I think Schwarber's been fine. I think Harper's largely been fine. He's been quiet, but has popped with a couple of big games. Bryson Stott has struggled so far here in the early going as well to find his swing. There's just, you know, a lot of unevenness by this offense. But this is not a surprise. Like, this is how they've come out of the gate every year these last 2 years, and they do find it. It's just really frustrating. But I think I just need to stop getting worked up about this offense not coming through in some of these spots, because I'm just spinning my tires. Like, they are who they are. I've been saying it all offseason. If you like the 2023 Phillies, you're going to love the 2024 Phillies. And man, this team is a carbon copy of itself year after year.
Yeah, I mean, it really is, except, you know, but when something changes notably enough, we're able to talk about it like you were just talking about JT Realmuto. I mean, like you said, he took a step back last year. Even his defensive metrics took a step back last year. His strikeout and walk ratio was more far apart than it had ever been or had been in recent memory. So to see him come out this year and he's hitting the ball hard and he's hitting the ball squarely and he's making pitchers pay for taking up too much of the plate. Rob Thompson was saying that when he's putting the lineup together, he wants Bohm and Stott 5-6 because he likes how they're able to hit with like guys on base. And now he's got Realmuto in the cleanup spot and he's doing the same thing. And he's like, now we got these three guys right in a row who can all, you know, get on base. In the case of Stott, you know, he's like you're saying, he's not fully a part of that yet, I would say. He's still somebody who's looking to find his swing, but that's what makes Realmuto's success even better. You know, he's shortened his leg kick, he's getting his foot down more consistently, and I think that's kind of key for him. You'd think a guy who refuses to not play wouldn't struggle with inconsistencies in his swing, but like there's a lot of moving parts that go into it, and you were starting to see that come apart last year as he's entering his mid-30s, you know? So to see him able to come out this season and start off as consistently as he is, having made the adjustments he's made, that's going to be really helpful for this lineup because, as you're saying, most of these guys take about a month or two to figure out where they keep the bats. And you don't have to be surprised by it to be irritated by it. Today, like I said, I really wasn't going to let them off the hook for dropping this game. This was a winnable game against a beatable team. It's pretty actually inexcusable, even with your number five starter going, that you let this game get away. And it comes down to the offense. You know, when you're getting, what, five hits playing the Nationals, you get five guys making solid contact. Two of them are from Edmundo Sosa, who doesn't even play every day. Like, what's going on out there? Like, this can't be an issue, and it's going to factor into what we were talking about before with this team's ability to capitalize on another team's vulnerability, a team that was viewed as completely invincible coming into the season. So I think I just got all the way to the playoffs from the seed of JT Realmuto looking better
it's
at the plate.
Great stuff, yeah.
Oh, goodness.
But in any case, that's what makes that difference so important because this is a team that comes out and is the same so much of the time. That difference that Realmuto is a bat that you can't just walk Bryce Harper to get to, as he literally proved against the Nationals. That is a big difference for this team, even though they've still had a very soft and disappointing beginning to the season.
Phillies as a team, 21st in baseball with a .238 batting average with runners in scoring position here so far this year. I will say, I think I've seen this, the walk rate is actually up a little bit this year, and their chase rate is down by about 3% from last year, which is decent. So they're just making weak contact a lot of the times. And Johan Rojas at the bottom of the lineup, again, if the rest of the lineup was hitting better, you could hide him a little bit. It's a really rough watch.
He and Castellanos are automatic outs right now.
They are like automatic outs.
Didn't want to have to land on that spot, but like that's what's going on. Like that's two spots in the lineup where you're just getting nothing.
And Castellanos is a little bit higher up in the lineup, but not much. I think he's hitting seventh most of the time right now.
Yeah, and I would say the expectations for Nick Castellanos are a little higher than Johan Rojas too.
Sure.
Johan Rojas is in that lineup to hit enough that they can put him in center field as much as they want to. Nick Castellanos is there to play every day, to hit every day, to potentially be an all-star.
I just
keep going back
to last year when he was in the playoffs and he just suddenly lost it in the NLCS. It's like, one day I was seeing the ball great, the next day it went away. I was like, how does that happen? I know it does, but it just boggles my mind. How does that happen? The bats are the bats, right? They're gonna hopefully come around at some point here in the near future. We said that for the first 4 months last year, and it wasn't until August that the bats came alive, but it was enough. Might be enough this time too. Hopefully not. Hopefully it's a different story. Hopefully, you know, Trey Turner picks it up, and Schwarber has looked much better here in April. He has not been on vacation in April. He's hitting very well here in the early going. That's encouraging to see. But you mentioned it a little bit earlier in the show, Justin, the base running mistakes. These are the unacceptable things for a team that's as veteran a team as this. That rundown that JT Realmuto and Bryce Harper tried to execute Saturday against a worse opponent, that costs them a game, because that's little league nonsense.
That's ridiculous.
Like, First of all, JT, dude, you can't get picked off. Why are you even trying to be frisky at first base with Bryce Harper at third and nobody out? Like, just, I know the offense isn't coming through with runners in scoring position.
Muto loves to see himself as a base runner. He loves to think he's a frisky guy, and he is successful some of the time, but he takes a lot of risks because I think he has bought into that myth of, like, I'm a great catcher, base runner. Like, no, you're a catcher. Stop.
I mean, he is a fast base runner. I give him that.
Yeah.
But mistakes like that are, like you're saying, John, they can't happen. But honestly, I think this is part of the plan. Kyle Schwarber was making reference to this. Their whole thing is being aggressive. And when being aggressive doesn't work, that's what it looks like. You know, you got your head thinking about your next move, not what you're currently doing. And that's exactly what you see. A veteran like Real Muto getting picked off? That's inexcusable. Like, in that situation, like you're saying, John, like, that's, what are you doing, man? You expect, like, a kid who's got the, like, rookie game jitters, like, to get picked off, who's distracted. Real Muto's, you know, but again, they're trying to be more aggressive. They want that to be a strength of theirs. And when it's not looking, it just looks sloppy. And they look sloppy. They're 11 for 17 in stolen base attempts. And they've made more outs on the bases than any other team.
Yeah, they are the best.
Other outs on the bases.
Yeah. Tragically common feels like trend for this team and something that takes them out of a lot of games.
Well, a lot of scoring opportunities just wasted with these kinds of and they're not hitting well enough to waste those opportunities. That's the problem. Like, if you're the Atlanta Braves, you can run into six outs on the bases and probably survive it. But when you're really struggling to barrel the baseball, when you're really struggling to hit the ball, and I will say, too, the Phillies have had their fair share of line outs over the course of the first week of the season, Bryce Harper specifically. In the ninth inning on Sunday, it looked like the Phillies, a couple guys hit the ball hard and you hit them at people. That's what happens. That's fine. But you've got to, I like the aggressiveness, Liz. I like being aggressive on the bases. I think it's a good mindset to have, but it's got to be disciplined also, like a disciplined aggression. And they did this exact thing last year.
Yeah.
We had this conversation, like, in the first 2 months of the season, the Phillies had created more outs on the bases than any other team, and then they fixed it. They corrected it. It wasn't a problem during the last, like, 4 months of the season, but for the first 2 months, we were pulling our hair out because the same group of players was doing the same thing. So they've got to figure out a way to get into a better mindset coming out of spring training and just
the only way to fix this is year round baseball, because you give them time off and it's over. You give them too much time off and they're just finished. You know, like I feel like there isn't actually a fine line between, you know, like a, you know, smart aggression and stupid aggression. I feel like it's not hard to figure out what that is. Yet the Phillies make it seem like they're just dancing all over it all the time. Whoopsie. Like, and they can't figure out which direction to go. Are we, you know, being too conservative? Are we doing too, like, they can't find a mode to get into this early, which is real frustrating.
What's the number of base outs on the bases the Phillies could have right now that would make it clear they were being aggressive, but was still an acceptable amount of times that they'd run into outs by being aggressive? Like, what's the number? Three?
I would say in the first, because we're just talking first nine games. And we're not talking about caught stealings. Caught stealings are something else. You do two toot plans in the first nine games of the season.
Yeah.
But you're just aggressive by nature. You get, I think, over the long haul, you're going to feel like you're going to come out on the winning side of that ledger. But
they can't keep sixes up this rate, right? This is just a confluence of. This is just one of those times when there's a knot of bad stuff, and it's all at once, and then we'll get past it, right? This can't be. They can't keep up this rate for the rest of the year. It would be historically awful.
Right. Well, and they won't. They didn't last year. They fixed it, or at least maybe luck reversed itself. You know, they a couple times when they could have gotten into rundowns, you know, somebody makes a bad throw, you score, whatever. But it is certainly something that, you know, Schwarber said that they have to improve their base running, that it's not where they want it to be, but they want to keep the aggressive thought in their heads because they want to take that extra 90 feet whenever they can. That's a good motto. Aggression is good. I think most of the time that's going to play out well. Right now it's not, and they've got to match that with a little bit of discipline and situational awareness and just paying attention. Like Johan Rojas getting picked off, you know, earlier last week. That wasn't aggression. That was just being dumb. You know, so they've just got to be aware of what's going on around them. So last thing before we wrap up here, they took 2 out of 3 from the Nationals. I don't think they looked great, but they looked better than the Nationals, which is fine. You've got to be better than the team you're playing that weekend. You know, you don't need to look like a playoff team every single day. Just be better than the team you're playing and you're going to win baseball games. But do we think this team looked better over the weekend than they did in the first two series? Or did they just have a weaker opponent, Justin?
I feel like they were somebody trying out a new game and they tried it at the hardest difficulty and were like, oh no. And then they switched it to normal thinking, all right, this I can play. And it still wasn't working. So they switched it to easy. And there they actually managed to find some success. You know, like this, they really did going from the Braves to the Reds to the Nationals, see like, what kind of team can we beat in a series right now? And it turns out the Nationals. So the good news is, we don't have to have a week's worth of conversations about like how this team couldn't even beat the Nationals. You know, that's great.
They cleared but that bar.
If we are accepting, not accepting, if we are aware that this is how they're going to start and have started every season, then, you know, playing a team like the Nationals is going to be a gift. You know, they're at least as good. And they won the games they needed to win to not make this a waste of everyone's time. But like I said, I'm not letting them off the hook for that. This should have been a sweep. The Sunday matinee game was, you know, a 3-2 loss to the Nationals with this offense. Like, come on, guys. So I feel like playing a weaker opponent, let them squeak out, make the mistakes they would typically make. I said on Friday that they were just getting out Phillies. The Nationals were making a lot of mistakes where, like, the call would be being made, and then the broadcaster, whoever it was, either team, would have to like suddenly shift to, oh, but he dropped it. Or like, oh, but it slipped out of his hand. Oh, but, and it was like for both sides. So like each time the Phillies seemed to be doing the thing that cost them the game, the Nationals would be like, oh, and like fall down a staircase. So I think playing a weaker opponent was definitely the driving factor behind these wins this weekend. However, that's exactly who the Phillies need to be playing right now while the missiles are still priming.
Yeah, Liz, I mean, I think that's very true. Yeah. This should have been a sweep, and they need to take advantage of these lesser teams when they play them because the schedule will turn at a certain point. And this Phillies team is better than the Nationals team. You got to sweep some series, especially like you said, it's a 1-run game. It's a 3-2 loss. You can't score. Mackenzie Gore is a really good, talented young pitcher. There's no real shame in maybe having a little bit of a hard time with him, but that bullpen of the Nationals is not very good. And they just weren't competitive offensively in those final, and really any of these three games. It was a series win, but again, I agree with Justin. I don't think it was quite enough. What do you think?
I think Trey Turner had like, I think he had really good numbers against Mackenzie Gore. I can't remember what they are, but like stuff like that is, where was that?
They said that at the start of the broadcast on the Nationals broadcast, and I said, well, can't wait to watch him no-hit the Phillies today, because that's almost always what happens. Like, when I saw the lineup and saw it was, you know, Sosa did end up hitting a home run, but saw, you know, Merrifield, Sosa, and Pache at the bottom of the lineup, I thought, well, this definitely feels like a Sunday lineup. Definitely feels like one. Merrifield, it turned out it was one, even though two of those three guys actually contributed.
I think it was after Schwarber got doubled up that Whit Merrifield finally like stepped up, then hit a single with the bases empty. Like, that's of course,
useful.
Of course.
Thank you.
Yeah, I would have been more helpful in another situation. All right, let's finish up here with some – well, first let me just mention Phillies now go to St. Louis for a 3-game series against the 5-5 Cardinals. You've got Spencer Turnbull against Miles Michaelis on Monday, Zach Wheeler against some fellow named Thompson, which I was just pushing on his face to see exactly who that was. He's 0-2 with a 6.97 ERA here in the early going. Zach Thompson, lefty for St. Louis. And then on Wednesday, the Phillies starter is TBD – going up against Lance Lynn for a Wednesday matinee against St. Louis. So that's what the Phillies have coming up here at the start of this next week. Liz, final thoughts from you to start things off tonight.
For me, just want to take a minute to pay respects to one of the greatest Philadelphians, Don Staley, who won another national championship with South Carolina today, Sunday. So just one of the greatest Philadelphians of all time, I would say, up there with the likes of other wonderful denizens of the city, Ben Franklin, other guys that I...
That was the only one, though.
Yeah.
Ben Franklin's the only one.
Probably. There are other guys. It's late. It's a Sunday
Rocky.
Night, and it's almost 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
Rocky. There's a statue of that guy. But
the pretzel vendors outside the vet back in the day. I mean, yeah.
Don Staley, absolute queen. Watching her coach was incredible. It didn't look like it on the score, but they really did just beat the crap out of Iowa and of Caitlin Clark. It was an inspiring, inspiring sight. So all love to Dawn Staley, the Queen of Philadelphia.
Yeah, and very cool how she thanked Caitlin Clark for elevating the sport when they were on court right before they cut down the nets and celebrating and everything. So she's for sure a class act. And it was a very impressive performance by South Carolina. I hadn't seen any games this year, but looked like they knew what they were doing on Sunday afternoon. So congratulations to Dawn Staley and the Gamecocks. All right, Justin, final thoughts from you, buddy.
Well, I've probably had about enough City Connect jersey talk for the year. That's we could probably shut that down, but I might also be covering the game for Baseball Prospectus on Friday when they debut them. So I just wanted to bring up that in all of our conversations about the jerseys being revealed, along with the full uniforms. I did not see the video of the actual debut at the Majestic store at the ballpark with the Fanatic.
They were booed.
They were lustily booed by the crowd. I did not see that. That's very funny. I don't even hate them as much as most people, and I thought that was very funny.
That was fun.
They should have known.
Yeah.
They should have known.
If you're online at all, that was a...
Hey, Philly fans, here's something.
Here's something just that in no way will match your expectations.
No. The energy was definitely going in a certain direction there, but it was fine. You know, you figure the Philly Fanatic is going to take the, you bring the Philly Fanatic out and you're automatically going to get a pop. It didn't happen this last time. And there is an interesting story by Todd Zielecki about the leak of the jersey a few weeks ago. That basically somebody stole one of the jerseys out of a shipping container. And posted it on eBay. Apparently this happens a lot, like with stuff that comes in. Dock workers will just crack a box open and take one or two things out of it and seal it back up and then sell it on eBay. Well, it just happened to be the Phillies City Connect jersey being shipped over before they got a chance to officially unveil it. So it could have been one of the powder, the powder blues. It could have been one of the creams. Instead, it was the City Connect jersey. So, try as you might. Sometimes stuff's just going to get out. All right, everybody. Well, look, that's going to do it for episode number 800 of Hit and Season. Folks, thanks for joining us here on this episode of the podcast. I will direct you to our good friends at BillyPenn.com/Hit and Season. That's our landing page over there at Billy Penn, where you can read the blog posts. Although if people wanted to write the blog posts, I wouldn't mind outsourcing that every once in a while.
Give them a shot.
Yeah, but you can read the blog posts that go along with our podcasts over at BillyPenn.com/Hit and Season. Read all of Liz's great work over at sports.yahoo.com and Justin at Baseball Prospectus and my stuff at The Good Fight as well. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time right here on Hit and Season.